Ekhatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekhatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at something a bit different, not a huge academic work, but a really slim collection of letters that have had this incredible impact. We're diving into Rainer Maria Rilke's letters to a young poet.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? 10 letters written, over 100 years ago? But they feel so incredibly relevant right now. And the title, Letters to a Young Poet, it's almost, it doesn't quite capture. He's not really giving writing tips.
Not at all.
It's more like a guide for, you know, living authentically.
Exactly. If you ever feel like you're just being pulled in a million directions by what everyone else thinks you should do, society, the internet, your job, Rilke's core idea here is like a total shift in focus. He argues that a truly fulfilling life comes from this really courageous and patient journey inward. You have to find the answers inside, not outside.
Right. It's basically a map back to yourself, forcing you almost to build up that inner sense of authority so you're not just swayed by every external opinion.
And to really get why his guidance feels so powerful, maybe we should talk a little about who Rilke actually was.
Good idea. So Rainer Maria Rilke, born 1875, he was a Bohemian Austrian poet and novelist, often called one of the most lyrically intense poets in German from the 20th century. Big themes, you know?
Yeah.
Love, death, spirituality, like in his Duino elegies.
But what makes his advice in these letters so potent, I think, is that he wasn't some theorist in an ivory tower.
No, not at all.
He wasn't a critic or an academic just observing. Rilke lived this stuff. His own life involved a lot of travel, a lot of self-imposed solitude, and he was incredibly dedicated to his art. The source material even calls it a religious-like fervor.
That's key, isn't it? His authority comes from his own struggle, his own lived experience with these big existential questions he's writing about. And the letters themselves, they were real letters.
Yeah, actual correspondence.
To this young guy, Franz Avar Kappus, he was only 19, an officer cadet, and he'd sent Rilke some of his poems, basically asking for feedback.
So Kappus just wanted Rilke to tell him if his poems were any good, right?
Pretty much. But Rilke almost immediately sidesteps that role. He says, you know, judging art like that is kind of superficial. Instead of critiquing the poems, he pushes Kappus to examine where they came from, the source.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. So he turns it inward right away.
Exactly. He stops being a critic and becomes more of a fellow traveler, sharing wisdom he'd earned the hard way.
So the book itself, it's these 10 letters written between 1903 and 1908. Kappus asks, should I be a writer?
And Rilke essentially dismantles that question, or rather, the need for an external answer to it. The whole book is this systematic encouragement to stop looking outside for validation.
The journey he maps out is totally internal. He champions solitude, not as loneliness, but as this like necessary space for things to grow. And maybe the most radical part is how he reframes difficult feelings.
Oh, absolutely. Doubt, sadness, anxiety. He treats them not as problems to fix, but as these essential transformative states.
Which is why poet here isn't just about writing poetry.
Right. It's a metaphor.
Yeah.
It's for anyone trying to create anything, a meaningful life, a business, a family, whatever. Rilke is teaching a whole way of being. He uses that amazing image of ripening like a tree.
Which does not force its sap.
Exactly. Trusting that slow, quiet, natural process of growth. It's like an instruction manual for patience, really.
Okay, let's get into some of the specific advice in these letters, because it really is quite revolutionary. Starting with letter one, this is where he lays down that fundamental test for any calling.
Ah, yes, the big one. Rilke gives Kappus this single definitive test. He says, go into yourself, find out the reason that commands you to write.
Confess to yourself whether you would have to die if you were forbidden to write.
That's it. That's the core of inner necessity.
It's intense, isn't it? If the answer isn't this deep, gut-level, existential yes,
yeah.
If it's just a casual interest or, you know, wanting fame, Rilke basically says walk away.
Yeah. It makes you wonder if you applied that test to most modern careers. I mean, finance, marketing. Rilke's standard is incredibly high. He's asking for a kind of existential commitment we don't usually talk about.
He really is. It's the ultimate way to avoid just chasing trends or what looks successful on the outside. It anchors you.
Yeah.
Which leads right into letter three, doesn't it? About critics and external opinions.
Exactly. If you do pass that inner necessity test, Rilke insists you have to become almost immune to external criticism. Your own inner judgment has to be paramount. Implicit trust in yourself.
And he uses that beautiful nature metaphor again to talk about not rushing things. The artist has to be like that tree.
Ripening like a tree, which does not force its sap and stands confidently in the storms of winter. Yeah.
It just flies in the face of our modern hustle culture, demanding constant output, quick results, hitting those milestones now. Rilke's saying real growth is slow, it's quiet, it's organic, you can't force it.
And when you choose that slower, maybe harder path, doubt is inevitable, right? Which Kappas was clearly feeling when Rilke wrote letter six. He wanted certainty, answers.
He was struggling.
Yeah.
And Rilke's advice is just so counterintuitive. He basically tells him to stop looking for the answers.
This is probably the most famous bit. Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves.
Love the questions. It's such a challenge today when we can Google anything, when we expect instant fixes, a five-step plan for everything.
Right. Rilke's saying, forget the quick fix. Don't try to intellectually force a solution. Instead, live everything. Live into the questions, experience life fully. And eventually, he suggests, the answers will kind of emerge organically from that lived experience, not from thinking harder.
That focus on the inner process, it changes everything about how we relate to the outside world. And maybe nowhere more significantly than in letter seven, where he talks about love.
Oh, his take on love is profound. He completely rejects that typical romantic idea of two people merging into one, becoming fused. He actually calls that immature.
He does. He redefines what a mature relationship looks like.
He says the highest task is that two solitudes protect and border and greet each other.
Two solitudes protecting each other. Wow. That's so different from needing someone to complete you.
Exactly. It's about two whole, self-sufficient people choosing to be together, but crucially, respecting and guarding each other's individual space, their own inner world. It's a shared task, he says, not just a feeling, the opposite of codependency, really.
And speaking of difficult things, Rilke doesn't let you off the hook with sadness or fear either. He tackles melancholy directly in letter eight.
Yeah, he completely reframes it. Sadness isn't some illness you need to cure or push away. He calls it a fallow period.
Like a field resting.
Precisely. A time of intense inner change, where things are happening deep down, even if you can't see it on the surface. It's necessary downtime.
And this is where that incredible metaphor comes in. The one about dragons.
Oh, yeah. He says, perhaps all the dragons in our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us act just once with beauty and courage.
It just flips everything, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Difficulty isn't something to run from. It's a challenge, maybe even an opportunity. If we face it bravely, it can transform into something beautiful. That's a powerful thought to hold on to when things feel tough.
Absolutely. And one more letter worth touching on, letter four, where he talks about sexuality. He handles it with such sensitivity. He pushes back against seeing it as sinful.
Right. He frames it as this powerful creative force, almost sacred. He suggests it's part of the same fundamental energy that fuels art.
Yeah. It's about embracing all aspects of experience, including the body, with reverence. It's all part of that integrated, holistic self he encourages cultivating. Everything needs to ripen naturally.
Okay, so stepping back from the individual letters, let's crystallize some of the main themes running through the book, these core pillars of Rilke's wisdom, and how they might apply to, you know, everyday life for you listening.
Okay, theme one has to be the sanctity of solitude. For Rilke, it's not about being lonely. It's the essential space you need for self-discovery and any kind of deep work, being with yourself.
And today, that feels more critical than ever. It's not just about putting your phone down for an hour, a digital detox. It's more about actively scheduling time to genuinely listen to your own thoughts, your own inner voice, away from the constant barrage of external noise and comparison. You need that quiet to generate your own insights.
Definitely. Then there's theme two, patience and organic growth. That idea that real development, real ripening can't be rushed. It unfolds on its own timeline.
Yeah, this is such an antidote to the pressure we feel for instant results, right?
Yeah.
The career ladder, the five-year plan. Rilke reminds us to trust the process, even when it feels slow or difficult. Value the journey, not just the immediate outcome. Trust in that difficult path, as he calls it.
Mm-hmm. And theme three, the transformative power of difficulty. Those dragons we talked about. Setbacks, doubts, sadness. They aren't signs of failure. They're actually catalysts for deeper growth.
So when you hit a rough patch, maybe a setback at work or just feeling really unsure about things, Rilke encourages you to see it differently, not as proof you're failing, but maybe as one of those necessary fallow periods, a time of inner adjustment or gestation.
Exactly. And finally, theme four, inner authority. This is huge. The only truly valid source of truth, of direction, of knowing what's right for you, comes from within.
In our world obsessed with metrics, likes, followers, promotions, external validation, this is revolutionary. Rilke saying, judge your work, your life choices, based on that deep inner necessity, that must I do this question. Mm-hmm. If it answers that internal need, then external opinions, frankly, don't matter nearly as much.
It's incredibly freeing, that idea. And Rilke's letters, they're just packed with lines that capture these ideas so beautifully. They really stick with you.
Yeah, so quotable. Let's highlight maybe three of the most resonant ones. First, that touchstone for authenticity.
Go into yourself. Confess to yourself whether you would have to die if you were forbidden to write. Again, it just anchors everything back to that existential core. What is truly essential for you?
Then there's that incredible advice for dealing with uncertainty, the comfort for anxiety. Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves. Live the questions now.
Such a radical departure from needing immediate answers. Just live fully, engage with the uncertainty, and trust that understanding will emerge through the living itself.
And finally, that beautiful, challenging vision for relationships. I hold this to be the highest task of a bond between two people, that each should stand guard over the solitude of the other.
It's a blueprint for relationships built on respect and mutual growth, isn't it? Where you cherish and protect each other's individuality rather than trying to dissolve into each other.
Okay, so let's bring this right into the present. How can you, listening now, practically apply some of this Rilkean wisdom?
Well, for mental well-being, that idea of living the questions is incredibly powerful. Instead of getting consumed by anxiety about making the right decision, you practice accepting the uncertainty. And his view of sadness encourages you to be curious about it rather than just trying to suppress it. It's almost a form of mindfulness, isn't it? Accepting what is.
Definitely. And in relationships, that two solitudes concept is so healthy. It actively encourages partners not to lose themselves in the relationship. Maintain your own interests, your own inner life. The relationship becomes stronger because it supports rather than replaces individual growth.
And perhaps most urgently today, navigating our digital world. Rilke's emphasis on solitude is like a defense strategy. All that external input, social media, news, endless comparison, it can drown out your inner voice. His wisdom is a call to consciously carve out that quiet space, to reclaim your attention and reinvest it in your own inner landscape.
When you boil it all down, maybe the biggest takeaway, the real gift of this book, is the sense of liberation you get from shifting your focus. Stop looking outside for permission, for validation, for answers about who you are or what you should do. The authority lies within.
Absolutely. It really is so much more than just advice for poets or artists. It's like a spiritual companion for anyone who wants to live a more conscious, more deeply felt life. And what makes it so special, I think, is that gentle human tone. He's not lecturing, he's offering companionship on what is ultimately a very solitary, personal journey inward.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.